Now what do you do when you're lonesome? Where do you go when you're blue? And how do you deal with such emotion when you're just an ordinary fool? Do you hang your head and walk the streets?
Good morning, Texas, and welcome to the Lone Star Outdoors Show. Cable Smith here with you. Great to be here on another Texas Saturday morning. That's the music of Justin Towns Earl getting things started for us. We've got a great show lined up for you this morning. As you know, we try to provide the most educational, entertaining, and conservation-minded outdoor programming out there. And this morning is no different, as we are set to talk dove hunting with Texas Parks and Wildlife Dove Program Leader Corey Mason. Then we'll talk a little country music and growing up in country music's royal family when Hank 3 stops in. But first, let's talk a little conservation, and we'll do so with the president of the Dallas chapter of Ducks Unlimited, Ted Hill, as they've got big things on the horizon, and he's going to fill us in on what they've got going on. Thanks for joining the show, Ted.
Absolutely. Glad to be on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, Ted, tell us a little bit about the background of the Dallas DU chapter, as well as the position that you hold within the organization.
Yep, I have joined DU, the Dallas DU chapter, specifically back in the mid-90s when I got out of college and was getting serious in duck hunting and conservation. The Dallas Ducks Unlimited chapter is a grassroots branch of the Ducks Unlimited chapter, which is the national chapter. And DU started about 65 years ago, back in the 1930s, when a bunch of guys got together, a bunch of hunters got together, and they wanted to develop wetlands, and they wanted to buy up wetlands when the droughts were plaguing the waterfowl populations.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas DU started probably back in about the 1970s, and it's the sole purpose is just to support the DU national need for funds at the grassroots level and to purchase, you know, the critical wetlands to keep the duck population moving.
Now, I also understand that y'all are getting ready for the annual Dallas Ducks Unlimited Banquet, which the Lone Star Outdoors Show is proud to be a part of. But how can our listeners get involved with the chapter and help make sure this year's banquet is a huge success?
No, absolutely. You know, we need volunteers. We need guys and girls involved to help us, you know, find those donations and help us run the event. The best place to find out about our Dallas banquet and our chapter is going to www.dallasducks.org. You know, we are currently meeting every other Wednesday, and you could click on the meetings link on our website to get a list of those dates and locations. You can also find us on Facebook. If you just get on Facebook and then search Dallas Ducks Unlimited, and we update that often and put meeting notes up on that. But our banquet this year is going to be in November. It's going to be Wednesday, November the 17th. We're going to be hosting this at the Crown Plaza in Addison. It's a wonderful facility. You know, for years, Dallas has been a top 10 event, and we've always tried to keep it a very high class and a very nice event. And we've got lots of great and unique items that we'll be donating and putting up in the silent raffle and live auction. And, you know, we just need every person to get involved with us to help make it a great event and get the Dallas chapter back up in the top 10.
And I'm excited to be involved, as y'all are actually going to be donating some stuff to the show for us to give away on the air. So give us the details on that situation.
Yeah, well, you know, we appreciate what Lone Star Outdoors does, you know, for the local hunters. And so, you know, we want to say thanks to you and all the hunters in the area. And we're going to donate a table to our banquet. Our banquet will be a fully open bar. It's beer and wells, all you can drink. It'll be a three-course meal. It'll be salads, a 12-ounce New York strip, followed by some desserts. So we'll donate that. And the individual that wins this table, we're also throwing in a bronze sponsorship level to Ducks Unlimited. And, you know, we just really appreciate the hunters out there and the conservationists. And this is just one of our ways of giving back to you guys.
That is a sweet deal. An entire table we're going to be giving away on the air. And we really haven't ironed out the details on how to win yet. But we'll definitely keep you posted on that. Ted, I know there were a couple of other things you wanted to mention. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, hey, you know, just a couple of things. You know, right now we've had a great donation come in this year, and if people will purchase their tickets before September 1st, you can go to dallasducks.org, and you'll see a Goose Master logo on the front page of the website, and click on it. And what we have is we have three drawings that we're going to do on September the 2nd, and the grand prize is a $10,000 duck and goose hunt up in Alberta, Canada, with the Goose Master. It's a great outfitters. You can go to goosemaster.com and make sure it's Goose Master, not in plural. And he's got a great outfit. The hunting up there is unbelievable. So the grand prize is a choice of a 3, 5, or 6 day adventure up there with him. Second place is $600 in Dallas DU raffle tickets. And third place will be $250 in raffle tickets. But you have to buy your tickets before September 1st. We call it kind of our pre-dove hunting special.
So lots of incentives for y'all to buy your tickets before September 1st. Go to dallasducks.org. Ted, I appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so much, Cable, and appreciate all the conservationists out there.
Well, we appreciate you as well. That segment was proudly brought to you by Lake Texoma Striper Guide Service and my buddy John Brett. He's the best in the business with over 40 years experience. U.S. Coast Guard licensed, John provides the bait and tackle while you fish out of his roomy 26-foot center console. He also cleans and bags your catch. Call Captain John at 214-724-5193 or visit TexomaStriperFishing.com. Family-friendly with discounts for kiddos as well as midweek trips. Call John at 214-724-5193 today or visit TexomaStriperFishing.com. We do have to take a quick break when we come back. We're talking dove hunting with Texas Parks and Wildlife dove and crane program leader Corey Mason only on the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
She stays at home too much. Says she feels so out of touch.
Howdy, Texas hunters. Texans have deep-rooted traditions that kick off every hunting season, whether you're planning a work day at the lease or getting the party list together for opening weekend of dove season. It's all part of the annual tradition. I want to tell you about a company that's becoming a part of my annual tradition, and that's GameGuard. GameGuard's been family-owned and operated in Texas since 2003 and is quickly becoming the first choice in apparel for Texas hunters. Dove season is fast approaching, and with the summer that we're having, the GameGuard Ventback shirt is a must to stay cool. And oh, don't forget to ice down your favorite beverage in the GameGuard cooler bag. GameGuard Camouflage is committed to quality and dedicated to their loyal customers and would love to be a part of your family tradition. GameGuard can be found in many fine retailers or on the web at GameGuard.net. And by the way, thanks for supporting a Texas-based company.
Howdy, range listeners. Les Mundy here, owner and operator of Double Diamond Outfitters, Texas' premier outfitting service. I'm currently booking South Texas Trophy whitetail hunts, as well as exotic hunts for axis and fallow deer, red stag, and many others. Check out my website at www.huntdoublediamond.com to find out about my West Texas Trophy Audad and pronghorn antelope hunts. Fall whitetail hunts are going fast, so call me, Wes, at 210-602-3118, or visit huntdoublediamond.com and let me take you on the hunt of a lifetime.
Southern Deer Stands manufactures the only high-quality, lightweight, aluminum-insulated hunting blinds on the market, providing years of use without any maintenance. That's right, no more rotting, rusting, or repairing. Just hunting. Southern Deer Stands product lineup includes tower blinds with staircases, trailer blinds, and ground blinds on skids. We also have deer blind windows, doors, tower stands, and more. Whether you need one or 20 blinds, we'll deliver and set up right on your ranch or lease. Call Rob at 214-551-1530 or visit us at www.southerndeerstands.com.
Come experience the Beef Jerky Outlet by the Bass Pro Shop in Garland. Supporting hunters and outdoorsmen's rights alike, this is the place to pick up your PETA t-shirt. People eating tasty animals, that is. Come check out our great variety of jerkies. We also carry gourmet peanut butter, salsas, deep-fried peanuts, hot sauces, and even Wisconsin cheeses. Visit our website at dallasjerky.com and let the outdoorsman in you experience the Beef Jerky Outlet, located by Bass Pro Shop in Garland.
Whether you need lights for your boat, dock, or anything else, Wildcat Lighting is the answer. Our patent-pending LED lighting system is innovative and practical. Backed by a one-year warranty, there isn't a brighter boat light on the market. Wildcat builds custom lighting systems for hunting, fishing, or recreational hobbies. So whether you're looking to bring in bait fish at night, show your bling on your wake boat, or rest easy knowing that other boaters can always see you, Wildcat Lighting has the answer. Visit wildcatlighting.com to see the lights. That's wildcatlighting.com.
Come to find out I'm not him, and Was my jack too tight that I tied wrong? It's impound test drive by the boat.
All right, that is Rodney Parker and Lonesome Dirge, 10-pound test, bringing us back from break here on the Lone Star Outdoors Show this morning. I'm Cable Smith. Pleasure to be here with you. A reminder that if you haven't heard about it already, we are in the middle of our first annual Southern Deer Stands Deer Blind Contest. My buddy Rob Griffin and the good folks over at Southern Deer Stands are putting this thing on, and we've got three fabulous prize packages. Go to deerblindcontest.com to see for yourself. All you have to do to be eligible to win is email me your best deer blind photo from this season, a celebrity panel of judges, including Texas Rangers Hall of Famer Rusty Greer and everybody's favorite professional bass angler Kelly Jordan are among the celebrity judges that will be viewing your photos. So be sure to send me your best deer blind photo to cablewaco@yahoo.com. Well, without further delay, as the North and Central Zone dove openers are fast approaching and the South Zone opener not too far behind it, what do you say we talk a little dove hunting with Texas Parks and Wildlife dove and crane program leader Corey Mason? Corey, been a long time, man. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me again.
Well, Corey, the dog days of summer are almost over, and just about every Texas outdoorsman I know has got cabin fever like you wouldn't believe. The dove opener means fall is here, and that means hunting season is officially underway. How are you feeling heading into this 2010-2011 dove season?
You know, I'm ready for September the 1st as well. I'm an avid dove hunter, have been my whole life, and ready for this summer heat to pass as well. You know, we're in the middle of our dove banding and survey efforts. We'll be finishing up here in the next few weeks and ready to get outdoors and enjoy them myself.
And I want to get into that dove banding program here in just a second. But first, tell me how many Texas hunters you estimate will be participating in the upcoming dove season.
Between 300 and 350,000 dove hunters we have in Texas.
My gracious, that's a lot of folks out there in the dove fields. Well, Texas, once again, will have the most liberal framework of any state, so tell us how your department came to the conclusion to once again have a liberal split-season framework with a 15-bird-per-day bag.
Sure. We work as part of the Central Management Unit, which a lot of people are familiar with the term flyway from the waterfowl standpoint from the 40s on forward, and which has initially resulted from learning bird movements through banding efforts, which then turned into some administrative boundaries to help with management of these migratory resources. Well, similar things exist for dove, where we have the Western, Central, and Eastern management units, really because of three distinct populations of dove. Texas obviously falls at the southern end of the Central Management Unit. So Texas works with our other 13 partnering states and Canadian provinces to derive harvest recommendations and regulations for the upcoming season. And based on call count surveys and banding data, populations are such that we were able to fall into the liberal package, which means 70 days and 15 birds in the daily bag.
And about how many dove will be harvested in Texas this season?
We harvest approximately 5 million morning dove, and then about 1 million to 1.5 million white winged dove. So cumulative, somewhere typically between that 5 and 7 million mark annually.
Man, that is a lot of cookouts. Now, can you give me a percentage breakdown of pre- and post-split harvest numbers?
Sure. Well, I can tell you that typically during about the first 2 weeks of dove season in Texas, that is, that about 80%, roughly 75 or 80% of the dove that we harvest are locally raised birds, which means they're born and raised in Texas, which kind of equates to whenever we have good range conditions in Texas through the summer months, that equates to good dove hunting, at least for the first few weeks of season. After that, dove numbers are supplemented with some northern birds as well. And I know we're going to talk about banding here in a little bit, but they're supplemented with northern birds migrating through a little bit later in the season. But, you know, we estimate we have a fall population of birds of mourning dove around 40 million dove and about 8 million white-winged dove.
And those are all residential birds, correct?
Of birds that we have as fall population, which means the beginning of the hunting season.
Wow, that is a ton of birds, and we're not even making a dent in that population.
No, we're not. When you estimate that we have somewhere between a conservative estimate and 45 and 50 million dove available to Texas hunters, that we're taking what's available to us, and our hunters comprise about roughly 30% of the dove harvest in the entire nation. And of the central management unit that we're at the southern end of, we comprise about two-thirds of the harvest in the CMU, which is by far the highest harvest management unit of the three.
Well, we sure like our dove hunting in Texas, that's for sure. One other numbers question for you. Can you break it down into what percentage of harvested birds are taken pre-split versus post-split?
by far the majority of the dove, and even the hunting effort, which is probably a more true measure of what's happening, hunting effort occurs the first 2 weeks of season. By far the majority, 75%+ of the harvest takes place in the month of September alone. But that's not to say that there aren't some good bird hunting to be had later into the season. You know, we have 70 days allowed to us, which means it's going to run into October and then at least into November, December, however, you know, we best allocate to use our days that the majority of the hunters are able to benefit from. So the September harvest is by far the majority of, you know, the time of field.
Well, let's go ahead and get into that dove banding program, Corey. How many dove are banded annually in the state? And if you could break that down into white wing versus mourning dove.
Absolutely. Well, our mourning dove banding effort is part of a national coordinated banding program, which means that we're one of many states across the nation that bans mourning dove, and that information is used and plugged straight into our harvest strategies that we're used to manage birds in the long term. We ban roughly 2,300 mourning dove every year, and then related to white-winged dove, we're basically in the initiation of that. We've been banding white-winged dove for several years now, but it's not something that's done at the national scale, obviously because white-winged dove don't occur in every state where mourning dove do. Mm-hmm. There's only a handful of states that are banding white-winged dove. That's Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. Texas, by far, is leading the effort on white-winged dove research. We have several active research projects moving forward with Texas A&M, Texas A&M Kingsville, and Texas State. And so we're banding right now experimentally around 15,000 white-wing a year. Now, we won't continue to ban that many long-term, but right now we're kind of in establishing a baseline and in the information-gathering stage, and we'll, after banding at this high rate for several years, we'll be able to determine the thresholds in which we need to band at to fall within certain confidence intervals for statistical, basically, confidence on our end. So we feel confident that we're banding and getting information we need at a certain level.
Wow, we are banding significantly more white wings than mourning dove.
Correct.
And where is most of the banding taking place, Corey?
We band dove across the entire state of Texas. We manage dove at the national level by management unit, but then within that we have subunits called bird conservation regions. And many species of resident as well as migratory birds are managed on these regions, and we have numerous bird conservation regions in Texas. And so we band proportionately to the abundance of that particular bird in those areas. So, for example, say in the Brownwood area, that part of the state, we band more dove than we would in East Texas just because there are more dove available.
Right.
And we band dove across the state, though, from north to south, east to west. Our mourning dove efforts are from urban areas to rural areas, white wing as well, but our white wing efforts, our banding efforts, we're doing a lot of that in urban areas as well.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the most educational or surprising thing that your program has learned from the dove banding effort?
Well, one of the things that will be most useful to us long term, especially related to our white-winged dove banding study, will be to learn some vital rate information. For example, you know, movements, but more even importantly than that is survival information, survival by adults versus juvenile birds, as well as movement. But then that information learned on vital rates, we're able to turn into generate demographic population models. We can turn that information and use it as part of our you know, harvest management strategies in the future. But we also learned some really interesting information on movements of these birds. And I have some information on that if you'd be interested in that.
Sure.
You know, we have things just from 2009 season, not cumulative to date, but just 2009, we harvested 735 white-winged dove in Texas that were banded, and mourning dove 177. And of those mourning dove that were recovered in Texas, we had dove representing that were banded initially from in Kansas, Iowa, Illinois, Arkansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Louisiana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Wyoming.
Wow.
So, you know, you can see the movement of those birds. There's a lot of north-south, but then we also get some of these birds that we wouldn't expect from a further eastern influence that we would anticipate.
Like Arkansas.
Exactly. And, you know, we had some white-winged dove that we banded that were recovered in Mexico, as we would expect, some in New Mexico, but in the past we've had a bird that was recovered in Guatemala and one in Nicaragua.
Man.
So those white wings, you know, a handful of them are making some substantial movements.
That's pretty cool.
So pretty interesting stuff, you know, and the average lifespan of the dove is talked about oftentimes being around 18 months, a year and a half, something like that. And a lot of times that is associated with very high juvenile mortality. But, you know, just for example, some of these numbers I read you, these birds were banded all the way back as far as 2003 that we recovered last year. Hmm. So these birds are, you know, several years old.
Fascinating stuff. You know, I'm always interested in learning more about a species that I'm passionate about hunting.
It is. It gives us a lot of information on, adult survival, which then we can turn into, generate some correction factors and then turn into, you know, what we expect for reproduction. And so it's very useful information on the harvest strategies in as well.
Most definitely. Well, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into the White Wings ever-expanding range, the Eurasian collared dove possibly smothering our state's native dove species. Also, we've got to talk about that steel shot research that Texas Parks and Wildlife has been conducting. So all that coming up as we continue our visit with Texas Parks and Wildlife Dove and Crane Program Leader Corey Mason, only on the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
It's cattle guards and no barbed wire, shooting birds in the fall, laying in the truck bed with my girl.
The new Bobcat utility vehicle is here at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth,
and it's hungry.
Get ready to work like an animal and love it. Powerful, ultra-comfortable, and sure-footed, this lineup of vehicles delivers legendary Bobcat performance, so you can sink your teeth into a wide range of jobs. With twice the horsepower, 1,850 pounds of payload capacity, and four-wheel independent suspension, you will love it. Stop in at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth to see for yourself.
Dove and deer seasons are fast approaching, so head on over to Elm Fork Shooting Sports and shake the rust off. It's the premier shooting facility for shotguns, rifles, and pistols. Featuring skeet, trap, five stand, and two fabulous sporting clay courses, Elm Fork is a shotgunner's paradise. Offering CHL courses, hunter education, and special wing shooting clinics with renowned shotgunner and general manager Jeannie Allman, Elm Fork has you covered. Conveniently located on 467 acres between DFW and Love Field airports, call 972-556-0103 or visit elmfork.com. That's elmfork.com for all your shooting needs.
Need to buy a trailer? Well, Big Tex Trailers is running a huge special on all trailers in stock. From four-wheeler trailers to heavy-duty equipment trailers, we have a trailer for every occasion. We also sell and install the widest selection of CM truck beds in the state of Texas. Special orders and trade-ins are welcome, and we have easy financing available. Stop by one of our conveniently located stores in Aubrey, Fort Worth, or Rockwall, or visit us on the web at www.bigtextrailerworld.com. Big Tex Trailers, tough as a Texas Longhorn. Call 817-654-9220 today.
Are you looking for the perfect place to send your hunting buddy? Then check out Tioga Retrievers. With over 20 years experience, Angie and Tim Becker can provide you with a field champion or a well-rounded hunting companion. Tioga Retrievers takes pride in catering to the needs of each owner and their dog. Conveniently located 45 miles north of DFW in Aubrey, Texas, Tioga Retrievers also offers day training and boarding. Call 940-440-0018 or visit them online at www.tiogaretrievers.com. That's T-I-O-G-A retrievers.com.
Bob Holmes Guide Service on Lake Richland Chambers, 1 hour south of Dallas, offers world-class topwater fishing for white bass and hybrid striper. As the lake record holder for striper, Bob knows how to land big fish. Featuring half-day or full-day trips with top-notch equipment and your fish cleaned and bagged. Great for wedding parties and birthdays. There's no group too big or too small. Bob also books peacock bass trips on the Amazon. Give Bob Holmes a call, 214-728-3310, or visit texasfishingguide.net. That's texasfishingguide.net.
Have you ever battled a catfish weighing almost as much as you on a rod and reel? Well, Team Catfish Guide and professional catfish tournament angler Cody Molenick says his 121-pound Texoma Blue Cat is the Lone Star State record. Fishing out of a 23-foot center console Falcon, Cody offers comfortable, family-friendly trips on Texoma to Waukenee, Lavon, Ray Roberts, and Cooper Lake. Call Cody at 903-815-0273 or visit www.catfish-guide.com. So book a trip with Cody, because you never know, your next catfish could be a state record. Call 903-815-0273 today.
Hey, this is Kevin Van Dam, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
You say we need to talk like I don't know. But you start speaking soft, trying to break it to me slow.
New one from Randy Rogers there, bringing us back from break here this morning. I'm Cable Smith. Pleasure to be here with you, as always. This segment proudly brought to you by the Southern National Archery Festival, taking place September 2nd through the 5th in Austin, Texas. They'll be giving away $250,000 in prize money. Be sure to check it out, southernnationalarcheryfestival.com.
Well, before the break, we were talking dove hunting with Texas Parks and Wildlife's Corey Mason. He's the dove program leader, and we'll go ahead and pick it back up with Corey. Corey, if you could, go ahead and talk about the White Wings ever-expanding range and also tie into that the Eurasian collar dove and any possible negative effects that could be associated with it moving in on mourning and white-winged dove populations. And I guess if you ever foresee the Eurasian collar dove being considered part of the 15-bird daily bag limit.
I do not.
Mm-hmm.
Eurasian collar dove are an exotic species and really managed like feral hogs. Basically, we do not want to restrict the take. You know, some states actually manage collar dove harvest. They allow them to be part of a aggregate bag. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, we view this as that, you know, they're an exotic species, and if hunters have the opportunity to harvest them, go for it.
Well, you just answered my next question, which was, are Eurasians viewed in the same light as feral hogs? And that was an overwhelming yes.
Yeah, you know, they don't have the ability to, and I don't want to compare them in the stance in which they have the ability to, you know, spread disease like feral hogs or cause habitat destruction like feral hogs can. But they are an exotic species, which, you know, we don't need to restrict the harvest on. And, they're a bird that shouldn't be here, and they weren't here initially. And, we allow harvest on them.
And on top of all that, they also compete with our native dove populations.
You know, they can, absolutely, especially birds that are urban birds like white-winged dove that we've seen northern movements to. They can compete for nesting structure. They can potentially compete for food. In the future, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, with the movement of white wings becoming a more urban resident the further north they go into the state, there is the potential for more interaction between those two species.
And so there is a possibility then that white wing and mourning dove populations could be suffocated by the invasive and opportunistic Eurasian collar dove.
Well, you know, Eurasian collar dove have been fairly isolated to urban areas. Now, you do find them, for example, say a big dairy or a livestock operation or some kind of infrastructure sometimes in rural areas. But typically the norm is you don't find them removed from cities many miles. Mm-hmm. Whereas mourning dove, now not naive to the fact that you can find large populations of mourning dove in the cities. But by and large, you know, mourning dove are more of a rural bird. Mm-hmm. Whereas white wings, once you get outside of the traditional South Texas area, you know, you find a lot of those in urban areas. Now, you know, we do have an eye on the long-term competition between Eurasian collar dove and white wings in these urban settings in the future.
Well, better to be safe than sorry, as you don't want to have an invasive species taking over. So blast every Eurasian that presents an opportunity. Moving right along here this morning, Corey, and this might be more of a federal deal that you have no control over, but just out of curiosity, why are we only allowed to have 3 shells chambered in our gun when we can legally harvest 15 birds in a day?
You know, that is an interesting question, and one that we've looked at in the past, and it relates all the way back to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 and implications there, related to typically when you start looking at harvest related to the shell in the hunter's gun from the first to the second to the third shell, there are very few birds that are harvested with the third shell in the gun.
Well, you haven't seen me shoot yet. I mean, I usually miss with the first two, so.
You give them a warning or two, and then you get serious, huh?
Uh-huh.
But really, it gets to the fact of with more shells in the gun, it starts potentially affecting hunter behavior, which gets into things beyond my expertise, and I don't even want to pretend to dive into. But it's one of those things that it's probably there for the long term, if we like it or not. But I believe anything beyond that is really not of much use anyways. And oftentimes that ends up in wounding a bird, and it's not fair to make a blanket statement like that, but you're not quite as restrictive on yourself when you have multiple shells there as far as the type of shot you take. And honestly, I can tell you that I'm a double gun shooter myself, so
right.
I like those stack barrels over and unders.
Oh, I see. You're like me. You only take 15 shells into the field, huh?
So
No, I'm kidding. I don't really do that. Well, Corey, everybody wants to know the status of the steel shot research that Texas Parks and Wildlife has been conducting. Are we moving towards a non-toxic dove shot season?
Well, I can tell you, I guess, that first of all, I'd like to address the word controversial. It's not controversial on our end. I can tell you that Parks and Wildlife has addressed this in a very objective manner, not looking forward to one way or the other, just trying to obtain quality, objective information. The research has been done in a manner in which the type of shells that are being used, and even through the data analysis, that everything is basically as well regulated and restricted as it can be, and the information that's produced will be scientifically valid as possible. Parks and Wildlife investigated this issue because of some of the conversations we've had prior. The number of dove hunters we have in this state, we really can't bury our head in the sand and act like this issue isn't being discussed. We are aware that there are conversations being taken place at the national level, at the management unit level, flyway level, various organizations talking about the potential for non-toxic shot restrictions being placed on all migratory birds. We felt, you know, to be prudent to our hunters that we need to have information available should that decision ever be made.
Mm-hmm.
That if it is made, we have information available on associated wounding loss of toxic versus non-toxic loads, the ability of those loads to kill birds, and the associated information so that people that are making those decisions can make informed decisions based on all of that information.
Well, I support the research that y'all are conducting, but at the same time, a couple points that I've got to make is, you know, dove hunting in general is not considered very expensive. If you start charging $15.99 or $20.99 instead of $4.99 or $5.99 for a box of dove loads, you're going to price out a lot of hunters. And secondly, what is our main concern here? Just that all species of birds are ingesting the spent lead shot?
That is correct, you know, and that's where the conversations are taking place. And once again, I just like to mention, and Parks and Wildlife has taken an objective view. We're just looking for the answer to the effectiveness of the ammunition and the associated wounding loss. But those discussions that are taking place because of the consumption of spent lead shot and the possible of lead poisoning for birds out there. It's been documented for many, many species of birds, well beyond just dove, mm-hmm. songbirds, all kinds of other migrant birds that do and have picked up spent shot. And it's obviously harmful to those species. It can result in, you know, decreased reproductive capacity, you know, all the way from there to death. And it's really the ability of those birds, even small mammals, to find that spent lead shot on the ground and consume it.
But still, there's strength in numbers, and we don't want to be pricing out any of our dove hunters, you know?
Absolutely. No, you make a very good, you know, case there, and we hear that a lot as well, you know, about the cost of you know, different types of non-toxic shock ammunition, which I believe there are 12 or 13 different types of non-toxic shot that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recognizes, all the way from, you know, really expensive matrices type loads that are, like you mentioned, you know, $15 to, you know, $40 a box, down to the traditional steel shot that's, you know, $6 to $7 a box.
Mm-hmm.
So the price range of those options varies tremendously as well. But you're exactly right. You know, if the only option is versus the $5 standard lead load that maybe you get at your local sporting goods store, or a $20 box of, you know, some type of a tungsten something, you know, that's not even a feasible option based on finances. There are some other options available. Some of the steel shot is much less expensive, but you know, those are the options that exist at least today.
Okay, Corey, a couple more questions before I let you out of here. Hot spots around the state, and you can, you know, break that into regions or zones or whatever. But what areas of the state do you think will have the largest populations of huntable birds this season?
Sure. Well, you know, Texas is a unique state in which really most of the state, nearly every county in the state that hunting is allowed, you can find decent numbers of at least mourning dove and white-winged dove in a lot of the state as well. And so we're unique in that way that, you know, we have dove across the entire state. And, you know, it's such a big state, I'd probably kind of like to divide it up if I could. Say,
sure.
For example, a North Texas, Central and South Texas, something like that. You know, in North Texas, that area around Throckmorton proper, and then the area around it is traditionally been very productive for dove hunting, and is still to date very productive for dove hunting, you know, and that can be attributed as really any county that's high dove producing county to grain production, native food production, you know, water availability, good nesting habitat, all of those things that are factors for, you know, just good dove numbers in general. In the Central Texas area, you know, there's a lot of good dove hunting to be had. From a recent survey we did, we found that just right under half, 45-ish% of the dove hunting that's done in Texas, the respondents were doing in the central zone of Texas. But around that, you know, Coleman, Tom Green, Brown County, Taylor County, all that area through there is very productive. It has been for many years and continues to be that. Once you get into South Texas, you know, all the way from Uvalde South down to Frio, Atascosa, Hidalgo, Bexar County, Cameron, all of that stuff is very productive country. You know, we have hunters from literally across the nation go to South Texas and hunt dove. It's been a very historic part of the state for you know, great high-volume dove shoots. But, you know, those are some of the highest harvest counties, is that Uvalde, Medina, Frio, Atascosa, Duval, Hidalgo, Cameron counties.
Well, there you have it, the dove hunting hotspots from the state's dove and crane program leader. And speaking of cranes, last question, Corey. You know, a lot of hunters have found it very inconvenient to have to add a sandhill crane stamp to their hunting license. It doesn't cost anything. So really, what's the point of us having to have that permit in order to hunt sandhill cranes in Texas?
Sure. Well, I can tell you where it stems from. If we can take a step back, and really it relates all the way back to regulations and population monitoring. Some people may be familiar with the Harvest Information Program, in which the Fish and Wildlife Service uses to gather information about hunters. There's some misnomers about that when you're asked the number of waterfowl and dove and all of that you kill. Some people believe the number they give is what people use as a harvest. That couldn't be further from the truth. What that information is used for is to put hunters in categories of high harvest, low harvest, and the Fish and Wildlife Service uses that information to survey hunters in the future with harvest surveys, with male surveys, asking them to send a wing in to gain information then on the number of birds they're harvesting, where they're harvesting them, and then particulars about those birds. The type of birds, if it's waterfowl, the species, the sex, the age. We're able to use that information to determine recruitment from the year and then turn that into the number of adults that are harvested or juveniles into subsequent years' reproduction. And a similar thing for sandhill crane permit. The reason that the crane permit existed is really so that the Fish and Wildlife Service has the ability to get to and touch sandhill crane hunters to get information about them, as well as at the state level. We have the ability then to do harvest surveys, to survey crane hunters, because it isn't a large portion of the hunting population that hunts sandhill cranes in Texas. Then we have the ability to send mail surveys, phone surveys, if we don't do that, but in some instances, if it were ever appropriate, but to send mail surveys asking people where they're shooting cranes, numbers of cranes, potentially at some point in time, you know, harvest surveys to gain that information.
Very insightful information there, and I knew there was a good reason why we are required to have that crane stamp, but I just wanted to hear it from you, so thanks for clearing the air regarding that issue. Corey, as always, it's been a real pleasure visiting with you again, man.
I appreciate your interview, and thank you for the time on the show.
It's been my pleasure. Let's do it again around waterfowl season when we can actually start hunting those big old sandhill cranes.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I wish a good hunting season to all those out there.
Back at you, man. You take care now. Great stuff there from Texas Parks and Wildlife Dove and Crane Program Leader Corey Mason. You know, one of my favorite parts about my job is that I learn something every week, so I hope that y'all found that to be as insightful and educational as I did. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the Williams family tradition of hunting and fishing as Hank 3 joins us only on the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
We used to do.
And I'm racing the bar again tonight. It's me and my old lady. Well, we had our first big fight.
Outdoor Pro Shops is Dallas's oldest and largest full-line archery shop. Come set up a new bow or change the strings or fine-tune an older bow on our indoor range. We carry a full line of compound and traditional bows in the following brands: Matthews, Mission, Hoyt, Elite, Struthers, Martin, and PSE. Outdoor Pro Shops has it all. Free setup and lesson when you buy a bow. Stop by and tell us you heard this ad and save 10% off any bow sight or 20% off any Black Creek bow case or backpack. Visit us at www.outdoorproshops.com or call 972-414-1969.
We all need a friend in the gun business, and that's why you should check out B&S Guns. Family owned and operated since 1987, we offer a lifetime warranty on all firearm purchases. At B&S, we have a gunsmith on staff at all times, and our 5,000 square foot building contains all your hunting and firearm needs. Open 7 days a week, we specialize in Nikon, Leopold, Browning, Remington, Swarovski, Benelli, Zeiss, and many more. Conveniently located in Garland, call 972-226-1816 or visit bsgunstore.com. That's bsgunstore.com.
Have a hog problem at your ranch or deer lease? We have the solution. The System Hog Trap comes in two sizes, 17-foot and 30-foot diameter traps. After you trap the hogs, take the top section off the trap and use it for another feeder site to keep the hogs away from the feeder. The system is both a trap and a deer food plot fence. That way you don't waste your money on just a hog trap. Call 940-391-3669 or check out the website at www.goinfencing.com. That's G-I-O-N-fencing.com or call 940-391-3669 today.
Cable Smith here to tell you about Star S Ranch. Frankly, it's the place to hunt trophy whitetails in Texas. I know because I've been there and seen their huge bruisers firsthand. Featuring top-notch accommodations with 150 to 220 class bucks harvested annually, Star S Ranch is a one-of-a-kind operation. Located in Mason County's beautiful southern Texas hill country, Star S Ranch also offers trophy exotic hunts. Visit www.star-s-ranch.com. That's star-s-ranch.com to book your hunt today.
drinking some George Jones and a little bit of coke. Haggard's easing my misery, and Waylon's keeping me from home. Hank's giving me those high tides, Cash is gonna sing it low, and I'm here getting wasted just like my country hero.
Cable Smith welcoming you back to this morning's presentation. That, of course, is the music of Hank III, the grandson of Hank, son of Hank Jr., and a very talented musician himself. Hank III is actually on the phone, ready to join us on the Lone Star Outdoors show. And this segment is proudly brought to you by Spit and Fire Jigs. They are the premier bass jig manufacturer in the Lone Star State. Check them out at spitandfirejigs.com. Spit and Fire Jigs, feel the fire. Well, without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce Hank III. Hank, thanks for joining the show this morning.
How you doing, man?
Oh, can't complain, man. Just another lovely Saturday morning here in the Lone Star State.
I hear you.
How about yourself up there in Nashville?
In Nashville, but boy, the old heat's been feeling like Texas, I'll tell you that.
Man, we don't have many non-triple-digit days down here in August.
Well, it's been something else this summer. Been thinking about all the guys that's having to do the time outside. Hard workers out there.
Yes, indeed. Well, you've been pretty busy lately as you're getting ready to embark on an East Coast tour to promote the great new record, Rebel Within, and that was released about 6 weeks ago. So what are yourself, the Damn Band, and Ashjack doing in preparation for the big tour?
Well, I always say this. We never tour for a record. We always tour to tour. We're one of those bands that doesn't have to have its product out there just to make us go on the road. We tour because we like to tour. And, man, I'm lucky enough to pull together another crew. We lost one of our drummers about 2 to 3 months ago. So we're all finally blowing off the dust and getting tight and making another run for it out there.
Nice. And if you haven't been to a Hank III show before, it is something to see as they play a full country set, take a break, and then come out with some high-energy rock and roll.
Pretty much, man. The country, the hillbilly, and the ass jack is kind of what makes us a little more unique out there in the music world.
Oh, no doubt. And I understand, actually, that the new album, Rebel Within, kind of gravitates back to your country roots. So tell us a little bit about the latest album.
As far as recording it, it was a little more smoother than the last one. Me and my steel player did this one here at the house, and the songs came a lot easier. And since I wasn't working with a stranger, that made things a lot better. So me and Andy know each other, and we got a good working relationship. And, you know, we had it recorded and done within probably a month and a half. I don't know. It's always good to see some of the super pickers that I only get to see whenever it's time to make a record that come in and play. And then I, of course, use my live band as much as possible.
Right on, man. Well, if you haven't already, be sure to go to Hank3.com and order your copy of Rebel Within. Also, Hank, I know something else that you're actively involved in right now is the Reinstate Hank movement. And I'll let you fill us in on the situation and what we can do to make a difference.
Well, all we can really do is sign the petition and talk about it. I mean, what's basically happening is they're exploiting Hank Williams and riding his name, but just not showing him any respect nowadays. And if you live here in the town that I live in Nashville, Tennessee, they're using him left and right. You know, I've said it a million times. They got the Hank Williams plays down there, the Hank Williams impersonator, on and on and on. They just keep exploiting them. But as far as bringing Hank Williams back into the circle of the Mother Church of Country Music is something that they've been refusing to do. And a lot of readers can go out and look for the 200th edition of Mojo magazine, and Tom Waits put a pretty interesting spin on that story. So the best thing we can do is sign the petition, keep talking about it, and hopefully one day the corporate people will do the right thing. And until then, stay away from the Grand Ole Opry and get your country music fill at the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and the website, I believe, is reinstatehank.com. So y'all be sure to go there, sign the petition, and hopefully we can get those corporate business suits to give Hank the respect that he so deserves.
Pretty much, man. I've always said the Louisiana Hayride showed respects to Hank Williams when he was alive and dead, and in sickness and health, they were good to him.
Well, there you go, man. Y'all heard it from Hank 3. Be sure to go sign the petition. Let's get his grandfather, the father of country music, Hank Williams, enshrined back in the Grand Old Opry. And you do that at reinstatehank.com. Well, now that we've heard a little bit about what's going on with you music-wise and some of the other things you've got going on as far as the public eye is concerned, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Hank, let's get into the Williams family tradition of hunting and fishing.
All right, you got it.
All that coming up next right here on the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you.
Are you looking for a great dove or duck lease? Well, then do what I did and give my buddy Vernon Richardson a call. With over 9,000 acres in Grayson and Fannin counties, Vernon Richardson's Hickory Creek Hunting Company offers the best bang for your buck. With farmland, pastures, ponds, and lakes, the terrain is as diverse as the shooting is furious. Kids 16 and under even hunt free. Conveniently located less than an hour from the Metroplex, call Vernon at 903-496-7747. That's 903-496-7747. Or visit www.rguns.com. Tell them Cable sent you, and you're eligible for a special prize drawing. Go to www.rguns.com today.
There's a Texas-sized buzz rippling through the fishing industry as Brass and Blades lures have taken center stage. State-of-the-art engineering offers a unique double hook, custom blade, exclusive anti-roll bend design, and even a semi-flex hook joint that bends with the movement of the fish. Brass and Blades boasts the premier lead-free buzz and chatter baits on the market. Check out Brass and Blades lures at www.brassandblades.com. Made for real fishermen by real fishermen. It's the bait with twice the bite. Visit brassandblades.com and see for yourself today.
Howdy, Range Country. Chance Cody here to tell you about Squaw Mountain Whitetails. Located only 2 hours from DFW in Jack County, you can harvest management deer or go big with a 200 class buck. With trophy elk, exotic hunts, fabulous wing shooting, and terrain with over 500 feet of elevation changes and beautiful Trinity River frontage, there's no ranch like it. Family owned and operated, they take pride in being a premier hunting and getaway destination. Call 214-769-3151 or visit smwhunts.com. That's smwhunts.com.
With over $250,000 in prize money, the Southern National Archery Festival is taking the outdoor industry by storm. Taking place September 2nd through 5th at the Travis County Expo Center in Austin. It's 4 full days of competition, entertainment, and shooting. Bring the whole family as kids 16 and under register and shoot for free. Featuring guest appearances by Bone Collectors, Travis, T-Bone Turner, and Nick Munt. Music from Asleep at the Wheel and Earl Campbell's free tailgate party. You don't want to miss the Super Bowl of Archery. Visit SouthernNationalArcheryFestival.com today.
Hey everybody, this is Brian Spagnuolo from TexasMotorCars.com. I'm here today to tell you about the best place in Texas to shop for your next vehicle. TexasMotorCars.com is a family-owned and operated business located in Addison, Texas. We have a huge inventory of pre-owned vehicles and specialize in trucks and SUVs. Please visit TexasMotorCars.com today. Come see me, Brian Spagnuolo. Our phone number is 972-481-1660.
Every sportsman needs a gun safe to protect his gun collection, and that's why I called my buddies at ANC Gun Safes. ANC is a family-owned business that prides itself on having the best customer service policy in the industry. ANC Gun Safe specializes in Winchester safes as well as new lightly scratched or dented safes that they sell to outdoorsmen at huge discounted prices. They also guarantee safe shipping on every order. Call Adam at 817-228-1184 or check out their great selection of gun safes at www.acsafes.com. That's acsafes.com.
Y'all, Cable Smith welcoming you back to the Lone Star Outdoor Show this morning, and I've still got Hank 3 on the line. And Hank, obviously I'm a big fan of your music, but the main reason I want to interview anyone is to talk hunting and fishing. I understand that the outdoors has been a significant part of your life, so let's start off with who got you into hunting and fishing?
Well, it would be definitely my father and my grandfather on my mama's side and my uncle. Since I was raised on a farm, that's just kind of comes with the territory. And, you know, I'd only see Hank Jr. 3 or 4 times a year, and naturally we were just going hunting when I was growing up. So So from duck hunting to hog hunting to deer, all kinds. So I've basically been raised around it my whole life. And still, when I get the time nowadays, try to get out in the field or get out in the woods and enjoy slowing down a little bit.
So there is definitely a Williams family tradition of hunting and fishing. And I understand that the tradition only continues as you've got a 17-year-old son of your own, Coleman. So I assume he's your hunting buddy now.
Yeah, last year he got his first buck, and still trying to get him a big gobbler. He at least got to take a shot at a halfway decent sized one, but he got a little impatient and didn't wait for him to get in the sweet spot. So he at least got to feel the rush. And my cousin got the biggest bird this year. He got the big monster. So it was a good time out on the farm. And Coleman's definitely, he's always been into it as far back as he can remember. And I can remember he's liked it.
Oh, there's nothing like the opening morning of spring turkey season. The gobblers, they're all in full arousal mode. You call them in with a little hen cluck on your box call and bam, blow them away for picking a fight with your little decoy there. It's hard to beat that, man.
No doubt, man. It was a little harder this year. Here in the city, all the big gobblers are hanging out, but driving way out in the country, we weren't having much luck. Like I said, my cousin got one, but here in my backyard, all the monsters were hanging. So I was like, well, I'll be. Funny how that works sometimes. You just got to keep working for it when you're trophy hunting.
So you've got big gobblers in the city limits in Nashville, huh?
Yeah, I live 10 minutes from downtown. I rent a place here that's got about 40 acres, and I'm basically right beside a big highway called Ellington Parkway. Mm-hmm. But we're lucky enough to have some pretty – you can go to YouTube and type in Tennessee Trophy Turkeys and see the big group of gobblers I had in the backyard this year. So
wow.
A lot of turkeys, and this is our first year ever seeing a buck around here.
Very nice.
Got a little 6-point running around.
Well, Hank, if you had to pick one, what would you say is your most memorable hunting or outdoor experience?
I would say growing up, it was probably the dove hunt, because it was pretty exciting getting 15 to 20 of your closest friends showing up at the field, everybody hanging out and talking and having a good time. And it's not really a sport where you got to be super still or super quiet. You know, you can halfway be relaxed and be a little bit loud and still have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
Those were always pretty intense, good times. And I was maybe 11 or 12 years old and have the memories of doing that once with Hank Jr. and Waylon. So that was definitely a highlight I'll never forget.
Oh, I can only imagine, man. Well, you know, September 1st is the dove opener for the North Zone here in Texas. But I don't know when y'all's dove season is, but I assume you won't get to participate with the tour and all.
Yeah, I know it. We've already thought about it, but we got to get out there and do our thing. We had a good hunt last year, and I'll just have to see what happens.
Yep.
Get a day off somewhere or not.
You got to do it for the fans, man.
You know it. You know it.
Well, it seems like you're pretty well-versed in all types of hunting. You know, you've mentioned turkey, dove, deer, obviously. So when you are deer hunting, do you prefer to implement a spot and stalk, or do you sit in a stand and wait for the deer to come to you?
No, I've always been raised sitting in a stand, mm-hmm. pretty much. And, you know, I've been in that stand and sat out there for 4 hours, and then here comes Hank Jr. and his wife, and boom, right out of the truck, she gets a 12-point. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Oh. So, yeah, I've never killed a buck outside of not sitting in a stand.
Yeah.
I know the tents have gotten pretty big in the last 5 to 8 years or so, and every now and then, I've only hunted out of a tent, but up at the farm, there's quite a bit of tree stands.
And Hank, when you're out in the woods, are you typically bow or rifle hunting?
I lean towards the rifle nowadays. I used to do a lot of bow hunting, but just dealing with the road, I haven't had time to stay up on that skill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's been the main thing that's holding me back from it. But it's always a challenge. I'm sure one day I'll try it again. And, man, I swear, the biggest bucks I've seen killed in Tennessee were all done by bow. So who knows what that has to do with anything, but I mean, full-on monsters for around here were done in bow season.
Nice. And so, by the way, what is your choice for a deer hunting rifle?
I've never had any problems with the 243 or the 30-06, those two, man. So keeping it small or keeping it big, one of the two.
And what is your biggest buck to date?
A 12. I mean, it's still a Tennessee small 12. I've yet to really get a big monster. You know, I had one pass me up when I was maybe about 16. He just wouldn't stay still long enough for me to get a good shot. And outside of that, I've never had a really, really big one in front of me.
Well,
so I've been to some of the big-time farms when it's not in season and you're driving around and, you know, check him out. There he is. But whenever it goes down to hunting time, it's a little tougher out here to get that big one.
Well, they get big for a reason, you know?
No doubt, man.
What about your bucket list, Hank? If you could go anywhere and hunt anything before your days are up, what would it be?
Shoot, I would have to say some kind of hunting up in Alaska. And it's been so long, I know probably duck hunting ain't the best up in there, but a good duck hunt down in Louisiana would probably be my thing. And I don't know, I've never done any hunting out west some of the big rams, and I've never gotten any elk or caribou or anything like that. So that would probably be on my list.
Oh, man, I have to agree with you. Going to Alaska and harvesting a big brown bear or a caribou, oh, that would be the end-all be-all right there.
I hear you. I got to see my dad do that once, and I was on a moose hunt once in Alaska. And my guide was trying to scare me. I'm like, there's a bear coming. And I was seeing it about half a mile out. He's like, oh, it's fine. And then when it starts getting within 400 feet, you know, he whistles and the brush is real thick over there. And then he just noticing, oh, there's two cubs with her. Man, we got charged by a Kodiak and she came within about 45 feet of us. And it was pretty intense. I got one awesome picture before I had to grab the old gun, but it was one of the highlights of the Alaskan trip for sure, man. We made it through that one, and like I said, I was up there during moose season, so it wasn't Kodiak season.
Oh, I can't imagine the adrenaline rush that must have been.
Yeah, man, it was full on.
Well, what about fishing, Hank? Did you grow up doing much angling at all?
Absolutely. I was raised by Big Sugar and Little Sugar in Missouri, and a lot of bass fishing. You know, rivers and ponds were the two big things. When I got a little older, I got to get out to Kentucky Lake and do crappie and bluegill, and definitely enjoy it. Never have tried the fly fishing. I've done some awesome fishing up in Montana, but never really had the time to really try the fly fishing very much.
You and me both, man. I'm actually going to attempt my first fly fishing trip in New Mexico coming up here in September.
All right.
Yep, looking forward to that. Hank, what is your favorite wild game recipe, if you had to pick one?
Well, keeping it simple, we'll stick with the turkeys, man. Just cut the breast into strips and soak it in Italian dressing and throw it on the grill. That's just basically keeping it pretty simple for when you're out there.
Simple and delicious. Well, Hank, we are about out of time for today, man. It was really nice visiting with you, and I sincerely enjoyed hearing all about the Williams family tradition in the great outdoors. Y'all be sure to go to hank3.com to check out tour dates. Also, order your copy of the latest record, Rebel Within. Hank, it's been a real pleasure.
All right, we'll be seeing you in Texas, and catch a big one up in New Mexico, man.
We'll do it, man. Well, hey, you know you mentioned a Louisiana duck hunt would be on your bucket list. Well, we've got some sick waterfowling here in Texas, so next time you're down this way, have Andrew look me up, and we'll do it upright.
Okay, sounds good.
Hank, I enjoyed it. You take care, bud.
All right, man.
Big round of applause there for Hank 3. I hope y'all enjoyed that as much as I did. Truly an interesting fella. And a lot of family traditions, not only in music, but also in the great outdoors, the Williams family. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to both of our guests. Of course, Corey Mason of Texas Parks and Wildlife and Hank 3. We'll do it again next week, same time, same place. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of the Lone Star Outdoors Show. I'm Cable Smith saying y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live old trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all